Welcome to What the Fantasy. I am Brandon Hay at HayB3.
And my name is Zada Kantabedian at ZKantsFF on Twitter.
Thank you guys for joining us. This is episode 4. And like all the other episodes, we start off with a little Kenny Gainwell, some facts. So this is my week to say the facts. So let's go ahead. So his college choice, he chose Memphis over Ole Miss. Those were the two teams he was going after. He won the 2019 Sean Alexander Award, which is for Freshman Player of the Year. And I looked up a couple of camp tidbits, and they say he's shining more as wide receiver than running back. And he looks natural coming out of the backfield and doing a lot of things with the ball, you know, coming out of the backfield and in the slot. And him and Huntley are returning kickoffs, so he could get some time on special teams. So that's just a little Kenny Gainwell love to start the show. And next, we're going to start with some news and talk about the Carson Wentz injury. So it looks like he's going to miss a good amount of the season, and also just came out that Quentin Nelson is going to miss some of the season also with pretty much the same injury. So we just kind of wanted to give our take on what that does for the Colts and what we think the outcome will be for them this year. So what are your thoughts?
I'm sorry, what? Wait, Quentin Nelson got injured? I'm sorry, hold on. I didn't know that. That's horrible. Yes. That is
He pretty much has. I was like, I wondered why you were giving that shocked face. I was like, was I saying something wrong? Yeah, I forgot you were on a.
I'm on a little break.
You're on the Twitter, you know, the social media, not getting on. Yeah, today he's going to be out for, I think it said like 8 to 12 weeks.
With Carson Wentz going down, you know, who knows what they would have done at quarterback? I think they were going to honestly. Well, okay, first let me talk about the Carson Wentz injury. They're saying 5 to 12 weeks is what I'm hearing. I think they're assessing it as they go along. But look, this is the thing. Like, we're in August already, right? So you got to make a decision quick. You can't just bring in any old quarterback. Like, you can't just go bring in Jimmy Garoppolo because, you know, with any quarterback, this is a system. An offensive system is like learning a different language, right? It's like going to a different country without any notification that you're leaving. They're telling you you got to leave tomorrow and having to learn the language of that country in like less than a month to get any kind of success. Like, that's what has to happen. And Nick Foles apparently is the only guy out there that knows the system with Frank Reich. So if they're bringing anybody in, I think it's got to be Nick Foles, because he's the only one that can keep the system on time, this offense on time. You know, he's competent enough to do it. I think he did it in Philly. He won a Super Bowl with Frank Reich. Just this Quentin Nelson thing just adds more insult to injury, honestly. I think we were expecting, honestly, like more a run heavy approach now with Carson Wentz going down, albeit how long, regardless of how much time he's out. And this obviously affects the run game. I wrote down that with Jacoby Brissett in 2019, the Indianapolis Colts were 25th in pass attempts, right? I wrote this down before Quentin Nelson going down. So I think we were going to see a drastic decline in pass attempts with the Colts. I think we're going to see them be, you know, bottom 10 in pass attempts. The wide receivers, this is not good. In 2019, T.Y. Hilton finished 59th among wide receivers. Yes, I know he was still like old then, but it's still a significant notable stat. Stay away. I would be staying away from Colts wide receivers. Even if they did bring in Nick Foles or Jimmy G, I really wouldn't be even taking him at the end of my draft. I'd kind of just be avoiding him. So that's my take.
So, yeah, that was great reaction on your part. I wasn't aware that you didn't know about the Quentin Nelson news. So that came out today, I believe. So that obviously is a big impact to their ability to run the ball. I think they'll still try to run the ball, but they might not be nearly as successful. And also on the Nick Foles front, I don't know if you saw this either. I don't know if the interview was either today or yesterday, but pretty much in a press conference talking about, you know, what he wanted. He was pretty much begging the Colts to come get him, you know, and trade for him so he could go there. And usually he's not a guy in the press conferences to really, you know, be that emotional and kind of say all that. But he was talking about how, you know, how Wright knows him as a person, as a player, and what all he can do. So I think that's definitely put some cold water on my belief that Michael Pittman Jr. was going to have a kind of a breakout year. I still like him. I'm not getting rid of him, but obviously it's not good. I saw that Jacob Eason's first practice where he started with the ones. He threw like an interception on the first play. So I think everything with Eason coming out of college was, you know, he had a lot of tools, but he needed more experience. So, I mean, he's going to, I don't know if he's going to be good or not, but there's going to be some bumps in the road. So I don't believe that, you know, and they just signed, who did they just sign? Brett Hundley, who's played a little bit for the Packers. So, but yeah, this is a big hit. So what does this do for how you feel about JT? This probably downgrades him a little bit over the season with the Nelson injury, right?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think with Carson Wentz going down, he was going to get increase in volume and rushing attempts. I think, you know, that would have been a common, you know, addition by subtraction, I guess. It does hurt him. I haven't looked at, because I just found out about the Quentin Nelson news right now. I know Quentin Nelson was injured like two years ago. I think he missed like a significant portion amount of the season. So I didn't look at what happened with the rushing stats then. I know Marlon Mack was their primary rusher then. It's gonna affect them. Quentin Nelson is, you know, he's one of the top guys in the league in run blocking. And so this has got to hurt him. Now we got to talk about where we rank him at. I mean, would you take him in front of Nick Chubb still? Probably not. I don't know, because he does get the receptions. JT does get the receptions. I think we can all still project him to have more receptions than Nick Chubb. But and I think we have to talk about scoring opportunity, right? Like how many times do they get scoring opportunities? It's going to be tough. I think the Browns are going to be in scoring opportunities more often than the Colts. So I think that's kind of like where you draw the line right there, is maybe Chubb, JT.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that, because even though Chubb does, you know, share some time with Kareem Hunt, he's just so efficient with his carries and, you know, he gets a lot of those goal line carries. I think it's overstated a little bit, the split between him and Hunt. I think Hunt is really kind of rises because he gets those, you know, three or four receptions a game in PPR formats. And people tend to forget, you know, Chubb didn't play four games last year. So that means, you know, Hunt was raised up then too. So I actually don't think Hunt will be as high this year in the final rankings. But yeah, the JT news, I think they'll still try to run the ball. So he's still going to get that, but he might not get the double-digit touchdowns that he had last year. Or it might be near the back end when Quentin Nelson comes back that he gets a lot of his production. Right. So as a fantasy owner, that might be too late, you know, because if you're out of the playoff hunt by then. So that's obviously something, you know, if you're on thinking about redraft, you might want to you know, kind of see if you can get some sort of package or something. But in Dynasty, obviously I'd keep him no matter what, because, you know, going forward, I think he's still going to be a top, you know, eight running back. But this is definitely big news, you know, with Carson Wentz. I was actually hyping up Wentz a little bit, you know, kind of be a sleeper for, you know, a quarterback too and super flex and, you know, kind of have a bounce back, because I thought with Reich, he would really do that. They kind of fit everything. And now the kind of the question is like, you know, is Wentz ever going to stay healthy? And I mean, if they say bring in someone like Jimmy G and he does well this season, I mean, I would think they're going to stick with Jimmy G or whoever they bring in if they, you know, takes them to the playoffs. So it kind of brings into question what happens for Carson Wentz for the future.
A lot of unpredictability.
So, so we kind of talked about the Wentz. So now we're going to talk about the Dynasty trade. I didn't get any response on Twitter, so I went and found one. I think this is a pretty good one for Dynasty. There's some solid producers on one side, and then there's some young talent on the other side. So the trade is Justin Fields, AJ Brown, and a 2022 first, or Russell Wilson, David Montgomery, Cooper Kupp, and Darren Waller. So how do you feel about this trade, and kind of take me through your thinking process on which side you would want?
And you said this is Dynasty, Brandon?
Yes, Dynasty.
Okay. I'm taking the Russell Wilson side. And it's not really a hard decision for me. I think Russell Wilson is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Why do you have to say that? We all know that. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I was looking at a stat yesterday. I was looking at the Cowboys and how they ran out of three wide receiver sets and the passer ratings of different quarterbacks and three wide receiver sets. Russell Wilson had an insane astronomical number for a passer rating. I think he was like 140 or something out of three wide receiver sets. He's insane. So I don't know if they're going to do that this year, but I'm going to take him. He is light years ahead of Justin Fields as a quarterback. I don't think Justin Fields will ever be better than Russell Wilson as a quarterback. David Montgomery is a solid running back, you know, low end one, maybe high end two. He's still got some time left on his career. He's in year three now, I believe. Yeah, I think year three.
Yeah, going into year three.
Yeah, Cooper Kupp's a solid, you know, Cooper Kupp's a solid wide receiver one. And Waller is one of the most, he's one of the elite tight ends. He's 28 years old. And if we're talking about lifespans of tight ends playing in the in the NFL, it's not the same as wide receivers. Those tight ends go for a little bit longer. And either way, I mean, even if you weren't in a position to win, in a window to win, these four pieces are going to put you in a position to win regardless of where you're at. These are very strong, strong pieces. Waller is insanely strong. AJ Brown is he's my pride and joy. I love AJ Brown so much, but I mean, these four guys, I think you got to go, you know, I think you got to go with them every day.
So, yeah, I agree. And just to go through my thinking on this, so in kind of coming out of the draft, I kind of compared Justin Fields' game to Russell Wilson. You know, obviously a really poor man's Russell Wilson, because a lot of time he can scramble, he can run, but he likes to move in the pocket to open up players downfield. And he's great at lofting the ball down deep. That's why a lot of people are really high on Mooney. I love AJ Brown, but I think he's going to be a constant, you know, a top 12 wide receiver, but will he go into that top three range with how the way the Titans, you know, run the ball? And now that they have Julio Jones, so there's questions, you know, how high will he be? If he was a consistent, you know, top three player, kind of like DeAndre Hopkins and Devontae Adams are, I think it would be closer. And then obviously with the 2022 first, it always depends on where that's going to be. Is that going to be pick one, you know, into the first round? So that's always up for that. And some people don't think as highly of Russell Wilson as, you know, you were talking. I looked the last 5 years in PPR, how he's finished 6, 3, 9, 1, and 9. So he's finished, you know, in the top nine the last 5 years. And then Darren Waller's finished second and third amongst tight ends the last 2 years. The only worry, I guess, is does John Gruden know what he's doing with the Raiders, and will he just fall off a cliff kind of like that? But still, I would still think you get two good years, you know, at the very least of premier tight end. Right. And I don't love David Montgomery, but, you know, running backs are so hard to come by, and he's definitely a top 15, 18 running back at the very least. And then Cooper Kupp, I've loved Cooper Kupp. I think Woods is going to do better with Stafford, but I look, Cooper Kupp has only had one top 20 finish in his career so far in 4 years, but three of the 4 years he's been top 26. So, I mean, that's still really good, and that still gives you a lot of fantasy potential. So I agree. I would take the Russell side. I guess it kind of might depend on how this roster is, because obviously I didn't look up the person's rosters or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely so much talent on the trade with Russell, and quarterbacks last so long. And it seems like he, kind of like Brady, he trains so well and takes care of his body. I think he will be able to last a very long time at quarterback. And even though Pete Carroll talks about running the ball more, I feel like they always talk about that. And I think the Seahawks will continually throw the ball, especially since they drafted a receiver so highly in the draft this year.
I think you bring up a good point with AJ Brown, questioning if he'll ever finish like top three. It's interesting, because while he is as efficient as they come at the position, you know, he can break one. He's done it. He did it so many times last year, but in that offense, it's just primarily based on the run. I mean, you can bring in Julio Jones and AJ Brown, yeah, but it's always going to be with Derrick Henry. It's always going to be based on the run. They're never going to be like, I don't think they're ever going to be like, you know, top 10 in pass attempts. I just, if they are, then yeah, I'll put my foot in my mouth and I'll stop talking right now. But it's going to be tough, especially with Julio Jones now there this year. Maybe Julio Jones plays one more year. But even with Corey Davis there last year, he missed, what, two or three? AJ Brown missed, what, two or three games? I don't know. Top three with the receivers that we have, Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill and Stephon Diggs and DeAndre Hopkins. You know, now even Allen Robinson might outproduce him going into the future with Justin Fields and, you know, Justin Fields' development going. There's a lot of – it's tough. So I think AJ Brown's value and his production, as great as he is, I'm not saying he's bad, but I think you could find it elsewhere. And getting what you have in Waller and Russell Wilson and Montgomery is a solid RB1.
I think, yeah, just to continue that point, sometimes you could love the talent of a player like AJ Brown, someone like that, or even say someone like Saquon Barkley, or, you know, someone like the Aaron Jones, those type of players. But you have to look at the value when you look at these trades, especially in Dynasty, because could you get similar production and get, you know, more on top of it? So in this case, obviously, you'd be dropping down receiver quite a bit, but you'd be gaining, you know, you'd be gaining the quarterback spot and the tight end spot and gaining a running back. So you got to kind of look at how they finish in the grand scheme of things, not just if we think AJ Brown is, you know, a top three receiver, which I think he might be, at least the very least top five in the league, but based on the way they play, you know, the Titans don't care about getting him the ball 150 times like DeAndre Hopkins or Davante Adams get. He's probably going to hover that 100 to maybe 120, and he's very efficient, but then, you know, he would have to get 12 to 15 touchdowns probably, and with Julio there, that's going to be tough, and with Derrick Henry still there. So, yeah, I agree with that, and that's a, you know, a good point that you might love the players on the other side. Like, I love Fields and AJ Brown, but the value on the other side would just be too much to pass up. Okay, now we'll move into our would you rather questions. So the first one is, would you rather be an extra in an Oscar movie or a lead in a box office bomb?
Yeah, I'll take the lead in a box office bomb. I mean, if you're gonna go big or go home, right?
I agree. And just to add to that, I looked up how much an extra usually makes. You know, $50 to $300 for a day. I think, I guess the main reason you might doubt the being the lead in the box office bomb is kind of being the butt of jokes, you know, if someone always makes fun of a certain movie and everything. But I think some actors and actresses kind of go with the joke. So it kind of becomes maybe even like, you know, a cult type thing where people watch the movie or you know, everything. I think the only time it really hurts people is when they get offended by the movie or kind of try to defend it and everything. Because I love Will Smith, and he's been in some box office bombs, that I don't agree with. Like I really liked Wild Wild West, but it didn't do well. And also, I don't think Hancock did well. And I like watching the movie. Yeah, I like the movie. So a lot of movies like that. I kind of looked up some box office bombs, and a couple that I forgot. One was that I don't know if you remember Monkey Bone with Brendan Fraser.
Dude, yes, I do. I did not watch that. It looked awful.
I didn't either, but I know there's a monkey running around in the movie from the previews. I looked, it costs around $80 million and only made like $7 million.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, that was a big one. So there's actually some, you know, pretty noteworthy movies, you know, and I think another actor that's been in some bombs probably the last 10 years is Eddie Murphy. He was in all those great movies. And then he started just taking, you know, any movie, you know, after all those Nutty Professor movies. So, I mean, those paychecks keep rolling in, even if you're in bad movies. So I guess that's why they keep on taking them.
If I could name the worst movie I've ever seen in my life, it was the Suicide Squad movie that came out originally. Harley Quinn was the lead actor in that movie. Movie bombed. Harley Quinn survived. Harley Quinn persisted. Harley Quinn is a favorite character of the DCU universe. The DC universe. So I think that's a good example of a lead actress in a movie bombing, but still, like, that character just lives on forever. You can't not like Harley Quinn.
No, I agree. And I guess I just can't really think of anyone that bombed probably at the beginning, because usually getting a lead role, you have a lot of roles going into it, and you have a little bit of fame before. I guess if anyone bombed early in their career, then they might never recover, but I can't really think of anyone that's ever done that. Usually they have a lot of good movies and then they do a crappy one,
right?
And then they keep on going. So you know, I guess if you can cash that check, then you know, it doesn't matter how many people see the movie.
Get paid. Absolutely.
So yeah, so the next one I think we'll have a longer discussion on. So would you rather have a flying carpet or a car that can drive underwater?
I'll let you go first. I went first last time.
Okay, so obviously the flying carpet, one of the things you first think about is the Disney movie Aladdin. I loved Aladdin. It's probably one of my favorite Disney movies. And I actually was Aladdin for Halloween when I was 6 or 7. My mom made the whole outfit and everything. If I can ever find the picture, I will post it on our Twitter. So that's really cool. And then, you know, driving a car underwater, my main thing was kind of like having a submarine that can go straight from the road to the water. It could avoid a lot of traffic. I would think you could kind of cut through distance wise. I don't know logistically if it really makes sense, but we're taking that out of the question. Another part with the flying carpet, as I spoke about earlier, I'm very afraid of birds. So that is one negative for me. And I kind of wonder, flying on a carpet, how much balance you would need when you're on the carpet. So sometimes I don't have the best balance, so that would kind of worry me. And low flying birds or planes or storms, that would kind of worry me in the flying carpet. So I think I would go with the car that drives underwater because it has so many more ways I could use it in everyday life, I think. So what do you think?
Yeah, I think solely for the reasons of there's just too many injury liabilities and concerns happening on a flying carpet. There's no doors. There's no seatbelts. I'm falling off that thing. I'm falling off the carpet in like a day. There's nothing on the side keeping me in. Like, you're telling me I'm going to hold on to the thing like this with my two hands? I'll be white knuckling the entire time because I'll be terrified. Like, just put me down. Just put me down. Like, when you watch like movies like, or like shows like Game of Thrones, and like they're just flying on dragons, like flying in the air, doing 360 corkscrews, and they're just holding the dragons like spike like this. I'm like, yeah, right. You're falling off. You're falling off a dragon. You're falling off a flying carpet. Give me the underwater car. I want the underwater airbags and the seatbelt and all the surrounding shell to be put in. I don't want to fall off a flying carpet. I don't want people to know my death as the guy that died falling off a carpet 2,000 feet in the air. I'm good. Give me the underwater car. I'm being too practical about this. I'm being way too practical about this.
I'm surprised you went with that. I thought for sure you would go with the flying carpet, because I remember in our discussion before flying. You said you'd rather fly.
Yeah, but that's me flying. That's me, right?
You controlling it, yes. Having to be on there. And yeah, logistically, yeah. And another, we didn't really add this part in, but in the movie Aladdin, that carpet was very heroic, always caught them when they were falling. But that was that carpet. Maybe you have another carpet that's not as quick with their reflexes and everything, so it might not save you.
What if you have like a 2003 model or 2000, like 1998 model carpet? It's not going to work. It's not smart.
And I worry too, there's one time when it unraveled. We don't have a genie to kind of put it back together. I don't know how long that would really last. And like I said, I think it would be kind of cool to drive underwater, see all, the fish, see, everything underwater, kind of like you'd be in The Little Mermaid, another great Disney movie. Right. So you could explore a lot down there, sure. You could, because now to go to an island or something, you have to fly or take a boat or something. And this would make it much more, easily accessed. Obviously, that drive would be a long time. But I would think if you started to have underwater cars, then you could just kind of stop, find, a little area under the water, stop and just take a nap in your car.
And how deep can this hypothetical underwater car go? It can withstand all pressure?
Sure. Let's say if the carpet doesn't have any limitations on how high you can go, then the car has no limitations on how deep it can go.
I'm taking the underwater.
Okay. So that we agreed way more on that one than I thought we would. And now this is something you put to talk about. So I'll let you kind of start off, but kind of projections versus rankings. So kind of walk me through, how you kind of feel about projections and rankings.
So I actually want to talk to you about this because I am about to start doing my first set of projections for the year. I'm probably going to get maybe two out before the year starts, but I just wanted to try it. I've always wanted to try it. It's really insightful. It's a great tool for writers, I think, when they're writing about players. They have a better grasp of how they feel about that player based on their method of projecting their production for the year. I've been speaking to some analysts in the community who've been doing a lot of projections, and I've been asking them, do your ranks reflect your projections? And they say, no. And I go, that's interesting. That's really weird because that doesn't really line up linearly, like logically for me. this is your method that you're putting out there. This is your work that you're putting out there for people to use. I assume that this is a trusted method that you believe in to go forward with, right? And like, why are we doing this? Why are we creating these projections if you don't believe in them, if you can't rank accordingly to them? And I've spoken to other people who have been like, yes, absolutely. Like my friend, like my buddy, John, I was doing a video with Johnny Hicks the other day from Fantasy Whispers. He was telling, you can find him at Johnny_GameTime. He's an awesome guy. He was showing me how to do projections first. He was very kind enough to sit down with me for about an hour and a half and show me projections. And he said, yeah, he absolutely goes by his projections. And he explained to me his methodology, which sounded really like really solid. I just think that if I was making projections with enough time, like say if I did 2 years where I got my methodology down good, where I felt solid in it, then I think I'd be basing my rankings off that. I know you just started doing projections, or I know that you do projections. I don't know when you started doing them, but how do you feel about using your projections and basing your rankings off projections?
So I've always, played fantasy football and kind of had an idea in my head where I rank players. But this is the first year I've gone and actually put out, how I rank players. So I did some dynasty rankings earlier, and it's linked to the page that's on my Twitter. And went probably midway through preseason, I'm going to finish up my projections. I have, I think, 25 of the 32 teams done. I just kind of want to tweak those when we know a little more about training camp. But for my projection part and put due ranking for just this year, I totally use my projections. I don't know if this is the best method. So I did, I think I did all 32. I'm going back and editing some, but I did all 32. And then there's a ranking sheet that, shows by position, quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, their ranking. And I look at see where everyone's ranked. And if I see that someone is ranked over some players that I don't necessarily think they should be, I kind of go back and look at my projections and kind of play with them a little bit in comparison. I don't know if that's the best way to do it. For example, one for me was I had Elijah Moore over players like, Keenan Allen, and I'm trying to think who else. I can't remember else, but I knew Keenan Allen was one of them, and I didn't think that was right. I still have Elijah Moore pretty high, I think around 20, but I've kind of tweaked that. And some quarterbacks I kind of tweaked because some of the rushing attempts and rushing yards, it's kind of hard to gauge. So if I gave too much to someone, like a good example is Taysom Hill and Cam Newton. They were like top when I first did the projections. They were both top 12 ahead of quarterbacks that I think would outproduce them. So I kind of tweaked the rushing numbers, maybe the yards per carry a little farther down. Maybe they should get, another interception or something like that. Like I said, this is the first time doing projections, so I don't know if this is the best way to kind of tweak after you do them at first, but that's at least how I'm starting off, how I'm doing projections.
Right on. And where did you learn how to do your projections?
So I found out about Kyle Yates's projection sheet that he puts out. And he put out a new one this year, and I believe it's $15, but it gives you the template. He has a video of how to do it.
Great.
And then it has all the teams, and then also you input names, and then it inputs the last 3 years of their stats. So you can kind of go over there, and then it has the team stats under there too. And then I also look at the passing stats, also separately, because it doesn't always have the target or the catch percentage and those type of things. So I kind of go through that. So what I did first was I listed out how I thought the depth charts would go and put everything right there. And then I just went through the teams. I did the teams that I thought were more easy to project or know what's going to happen. I kind of started, I think, with the Buccaneers and then the Cardinals and kind of went through there. And then I kind of went back through. And then there's actually a group chat on Twitter of a lot of people that do projections, and we kind of bounce ideas off of each other. I'll say, this is what I did with Lamar. What did you guys do? Because I had trouble with Lamar because I think they will pass it more, but he has never passed it, I think, over 400 times. And when I first projected, it was like him passing the ball over 500 times.
Wow.
And the rushing was still up there. He still was around 1,000 yards rushing in my projections. But that's the thing. If it can a player take that big of a jump, in 1 year, even with the extra game, kind of what I did the same with Mike Davis, because he's the pretty much the lone running back in Atlanta, and but he's not Derrick Henry. So I had to, once I went back through, I had to kind of limit his carries and kind of give some more to a couple other running backs, even though I don't think they necessarily should get that much of a carry load. Just realistically, how much can, you know, one player jump in touches, you know, from 1 year to the next?
So let me ask you a question for anybody listening to this podcast and who hasn't done projections, or anybody watching this right now or goes back and watches it. Something I've always wondered, as somebody who hasn't done any projections yet, is how do you project a team that has a coach, like, say, if we go back to the New York Jets and your ranking of Elijah Moore at 20, which is totally fine. I can see it happening. But how do you project a player like that when you have a head coach who was a defensive, who came over to the team as a defensive coordinator? How do you project a team offensively with that? Are you looking at essentially what Kyle Shanahan did on his offense, assuming that Saleh is going to adopt those offensive tendencies? And are you projecting Elijah Moore to play in the slot? And if so, are you looking at what Kyle Shanahan did with his players in the slot and how much they produce? How did you project a team with a whole new coaching staff, new quarterback, new offensive piece?
So yeah, that's a very good question. And I'll take a couple of examples of what I did. So for the Jets, I kind of did, because it seemed like, you know, he learned a lot from the 49ers. And it seems like, at least from what I've heard, they're going to run some similar type system. And with the Elijah Moore, I kind of considered he will take some of the Debo Samuel role, where they give him a lot of catches around the line of scrimmage, a lot of short catches, and get him in space and let him produce. But I think he'll also go down the field like Brandon Ayuk does. So I just think they have to use him all over the field. And me hearing from reports that, you know, he's pretty much, you know, in the top two with Corey Davis, and then it's Keelan Cole and Denzel Mims. At right now, at least, it's running fourth. I just think they'll use him a lot like that. And with a new coaching staff, when they usually draft or bring someone in like they did Corey Davis and Elijah Moore, they're going to use those players. And also with the running backs, none of them at the moment have seemed to have that much upside. You know, Michael Carter has some, but we don't know what he's going to do. So that's what I kind of do with that. If there's a new coach, I look at who their offensive coordinator is, what I kind of think their style will be based on, you know, where they came from, and then kind of gauge that. But on the other side, for the Jaguars, I went back and looked at Urban Meyer, what he did at Ohio State and Florida. Mostly Ohio State, since it's more recent. I know that they got Daryl Bevel as the offensive coordinator, but my belief, at least, is Bevel is more there to help Urban in just assimilating to the NFL, give him, you know, kind of a sounding board. I think it's more Urban's offense than Bevel. So I kind of looked at rushing percentage and passing percentage, and, you know, how he used players like Curtis Samuel, wide running backs that were kind of wide receivers too. But also, I couldn't use the percentages, because the rushing percentage in college is way higher than in the NFL. So for instance, he ran the ball, you know, about 60% of the time at Ohio State, and that wasn't even, you know, top 10. And then in the NFL, like the Ravens, they're right around 50%, a little under, and they're like top three. So I kind of looked at just rankings of run percentage in the NFL the last couple of years, and I kind of looked at middle of the road. I thought, you know, because the Jaguars were pretty low last year, I think like 29 or 30th. And I figure with a better quarterback, a better coach, you know, a better, you know, scheme, I went on the low end and moved them up to 20, which isn't, you know, a huge jump. It's really not that much. It's just a couple more runs a game, and then use that rushing percentage to figure out the play style. And then to figure out how many plays, what I did was I took the amount of plays last year, divided by the games, so 16, however many plays they had a game, so say 62. And based on their offseason moves, if I think they're going to have more plays per game, then I would add one or two to per game and then multiply it by 17 or take one or two away.
Okay. That sounds good. I can't wait to see what Elijah Moore did. I bet it made you feel good watching him catch that like 90-yard bomb from Zach Wilson in camp, like day two of camp. Did you see that?
I did. So I was really high on Elijah Moore and Rondale Moore. So I'm going all in on the Moores, and you know, I feel a little better on Elijah, because they don't have DeAndre Hopkins there, who like just dominates all that. And I think I mentioned to you, I want to kind of look at get the look through the game scripts and everything to see how often Kyler either runs or throws it to D-Hop or throws it to the other options, because that, you know, especially in four wide receiver sets, because that would kind of tell how many targets are really open for Rondale and everything. But yeah, I was super excited for Elijah to get those deep bombs in Jets camp. So hopefully they can keep it going.
Man, let's go.
So yeah, that's exciting that you're going to start that, even just, you know, getting a few teams out there. So
I just want to say real quick, I'm working on something for the season. This is going to be like my exclusive content. Myself, I'll be putting it out there. I'm going to announce it later on, probably in the second half of the month once I get it dialed in. But I just be on the lookout for that. I'll let you know after the show, Brandon.
Okay, that's exciting. Yeah, I was surprised about that when you said it, because I hadn't heard anything, but that's cool. Yeah, you give you do a lot of good research, you know, on game scripts and everything. And I know you've done one on Tony Pollard and David Montgomery, and I know we've talked about those, and they're really good information and everything. So I'm sure that's going to be great. So I'm excited to hear about that. So we have a football game coming up in 2 days.
Let's go, man.
I did not even know there was a football game until this Saturday. I was talking to one of my friends, and actually we're going on his bachelor party this weekend, and our first night will be Thursday. And he was like, how awesome is it? You know, first night of the bachelor party, we get to watch a football game. I was like, there's a football game? And then I had to look it up. So it's the Cowboys and the Steelers.
Let's go,
I know, man. This first game on the Hall of Fame game, I know a lot of starters don't play a lot, but with kind of the shortened timeline, they might play more. So I kind of wanted to talk about what we really want to see for both teams, and then kind of highlight a couple players from each teams that we're kind of looking to see. So why don't you go ahead and start what you're looking for from both teams?
Yeah, I just wanted to say real quick, I know it can be difficult to watch Hall of Fame games because there's like barely any, it's like a 14-point total score game. But I think it's really important, especially for like dynasty players and even ADP and even redraft players, to see what coaching tendencies are, what coaches are doing with formations. If you know anything about a certain team and the way they play, you'll familiarize yourself with the way they deploy their receivers. So I think it's important to watch for formations. But that being said, what I'm looking for with the Cowboys is I want to watch Simi Fehoko, a wide receiver out of Stanford. I really liked him out of Stanford. He doesn't have too much of a developed route tree yet, from what I saw. He ran a lot of fade routes, which are pretty much just, you know, go deep. He ran a lot of curl routes and slants. He has a variety of tools to come off the line of scrimmage. He has a quick release. He does a really good job with foot fire. He does a really good job with getting the defender's hands off him. Great ball tracking, contested catch guy, small but physical. So it's going to be really interesting to see him play. He's kind of electric. He's an electric player. I think we're going to see a lot of him on the field, a lot of snaps. With the Steelers, I want to see Dwayne Haskins. There's a lot of reports coming out of camp that he's pushing Mason Rudolph out. I don't like Mason Rudolph. Mason Rudolph has no upside. We've seen Mason Rudolph play for essentially an entire year when Roethlisberger went out with the elbow injury in 2019. He had a whole year to do something. He didn't do anything. We had Duck Hodges taking over Mason Rudolph. You know, it was just so bad. Mason Rudolph's already throwing picks in camp. You know, picks in camp aren't, you know, it's nothing really to write home about. But when you have a backup quarterback who hasn't done anything, and you got Dwayne Haskins, who was supposedly playing horribly with Washington, coming in outplaying Mason, I think it's going to be interesting to watch Dwayne Haskins perform. Say he does good this preseason. Say he takes over the number two spot. How much more longer is Ben Roethlisberger going to play for the Steelers? This could be his last year. Say Roethlisberger gets injured this year, right? And Haskins comes in and keeps that offense on time down the field. I think, you know, it's something that's noteworthy to watch. Let's watch how he does. Let's watch to see if he builds momentum. Let's watch to see if he is the same old Haskins that we saw in Washington the past couple of years. It's not really hard to tell which Haskins is which, because that Haskins that we saw in Washington was really bad. One of the most inaccurate quarterbacks that we ever saw. A quarterback that we saw constantly miss open windows, wide receivers running in beautiful windows that he just completely did not see. So let's keep our eyes on Haskins. You know, maybe a good dynasty stash. Maybe he's got some upside left. Former first round pick out of Ohio State. Let's keep our eyes on him. And one more thing I want to watch out of Dallas is that we have a lot of Blake Jarwin hype coming out this season, just like we did last season. But we saw Dalton Schultz do the damn thing last year. We saw him perform last year. And Mike McCarthy has been a guy who's run a lot of 11-man personnel, which basically means you have one primary tight end on the field and three wide receivers. And in fantasy football, we want to have a tight end in an offense who's running as the sole tight end, because any tight end targets that come to that position is going to be to him. But when you have two tight ends who play well in Dalton Schultz and Blake Jarwin, I'm curious to see if Mike McCarthy starts messing around with that formation. Now, the Cowboys in 2019 or 2020 with Dak Prescott, before Dak Prescott went down, ran the most snaps out of 11-man formations at 79%. Now, I don't think it's going to be a likelihood that they run a lot of 12-man formations, because you got Gallup, Amari Cooper, and CeeDee Lamb. But I think it's justified in that maybe they want to get the ground game going more, maybe hide their defense. You don't want to maybe get Dak Prescott going into too many shootouts as an NFL coach and subjugate him to too many pass rushes and get him injured again. So, you know, something to keep an eye out on. Another reason to watch the Hall of Fame game, you know. So those are some things I'll be looking out for the Hall of Fame game. How about you?
Yeah, there's a couple things that you said that I also am looking at. One thing for the Cowboys is that kind of tight end rotation. And what I've kind of been saying is I think combined Schultz and Jarwin could be a top 12 tight end, but it's their production of both of them combined. You're never going to know which tight end is going to have the better game. So unless you have some sort of best ball type league, I would go elsewhere where there's a more set player at tight end. But kind of looking at the Cowboys, I want to see who that fourth wide receiver would be, because we know the top three. So I would imagine they're not going to play Dak very long, if at all. They might play some of the receivers a little bit. I know Cooper has been kind of banged up, so I know they won't want to do that. And I want to see also, is that Dallas's defense still lost? You know, I've seen some training camp videos where CeeDee Lamb's making one-handed catches and catches over people. And that's great for CeeDee Lamb, because I love him. I think he's really good, but also, is he able to make all these plays because the defense, you know, isn't making plays on the ball? You know, they brought in some injury prone and some kind of older defensive players to hope to shore that up. So I'm very interested on that. And also another player for the Cowboys that I think might get a lot of play in that first game is Brennan Eagles from Texas. Very fast, and I want to see. He probably won't get much time this year necessarily. But, you know, he could be kind of a stash in dynasty. And then for the Steelers, they have a new offensive coordinator. So I want to see, because last year to hide the offensive line struggles and Ben's lack of mobility, they threw a lot of quick passes, and also they didn't have a very good running game. So I want to see, are they still going to go with that quick passing attack? Also, after Najee, you know, what does the running back rotation look like? They brought in Kalen Ballage, then they have Benny Snell, McFarland. So how does that really go? I mean, I don't know if all of those guys will make the roster, but there will have to be a second running back. Even though Najee will get the majority of the snaps, there could be one that could be somewhat interesting, maybe in a flat spot, you know, with good matchups. So that's something that I want to look for the Steelers. And also the tight end spot, I want to see how Pat Freiermuth is used. I don't know how much, you know, him coming off the injury in college last year, how much he'll play, but I'm interested about him, because I could see them using more two tight ends to get the running game going with their struggles on the offensive line. So those are some of the things that I'm kind of looking at. Like you said, the Hall of Fame game, I kind of sometimes struggle to watch the whole thing. I'll maybe watch a half or maybe three quarters, but it is good to just at least, you know, check in to see, you know, who's doing well, because that can at least tell you who might be getting more reps in practice after that game and maybe trending up during training camp in the preseason. So I think that's a good thing. So anything else you want to say about the Hall of Fame game?
I think looking at the running backs in the Steelers' backfield behind Najee Harris, when you look at what, you know, Kalen Ballage is a guy who's got actually a pretty good shot to win the favorite for RB2 duties, save Najee Harris does go down an unfortunate injury. In the two games that Najee Harris played with the San Diego Chargers last year, in the two games that he's had saw at least 67% of the snaps, he caught 12 of 15 targets for 61 yards. Now that tells me that Kalen Ballage is a competent pass catching running back at least. Hopefully he produces. Hopefully we see something of him in the Hall of Fame game. Anthony McFarland, we didn't see too much maturity from him last year. I like Anthony McFarland a lot. I like Anthony McFarland a lot out of Maryland. He's a game breaker. You know, as soon as he gets loose, he's gone. Benny Snell is just he's so jag. He's just so underwhelming as a player. He's like your grinder, but you got to have some juice. You got to bring something. This is the NFL, right? So what do you bring? Benny Snell is just a dude. He's just a normal guy taking up, you know, an extra set of towels in the locker room. Like, he doesn't need to be there. Like, one of those guys can go. And we got reports coming out of camp that Benny Snell is a likely cut candidate. So I think Kalen Ballage, if he starts playing like a running back who is his size, he's got the pass catching aspect down. Let's see the guy do some work. I think, if anything, he can be like a solid RB2 if he wins that job, if Najee Harris goes down. Also, great point about Pat Freiermuth. I think we can see a lot of two tight end sets, and I think we can see Juju Smith-Schuster or either him or Claypool, probably Smith-Schuster, not be on the field as much because of those two tight end sets. So that would be interesting to look out for too.
Yeah, just speaking of Benny Snell, I know last year he fooled me when Connor left one of the early games, and then Snell came in and he actually produced pretty well. I spent a lot of fab, you know, in a waiver priority that week trying to get up, you know, Benny Snell. And then, you know, Connor comes back and Snell doesn't have the job. And he looks like you said, just a guy. So, yeah, I'm not very high on him. And I've heard McFarland, they like him, you know, coming out of the backfield. And a lot of people are projecting him to get some receptions. What percentage do you think Najee will get of the running backs? Say, you know, of the rushes, and you know, how many touches do you think he really can get in his rookie year?
Easily 250 touches, easily. I mean, with the 17 game, obviously it's gonna be 250 touches. I think we could see 300 touches out of Najee Harris this year. I think we really could. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers love throwing to the running backs. They're infamous for throwing to the running backs. James Conner, 8 receptions. James Conner was also, side note, I love James Conner. James Conner was a great pass catcher. If James Conner can do it, watching the Najee Harris go off, they're going to be throwing up so many screens for him, so many dump offs. They're going to use him. I mean, Le'Veon Bell was a breed of rarity in the pass catching game. They lined him up like a wide receiver. Maybe we see some of that with Najee Harris. I think he's a lot more athletic than James Conner, but not as athletic as Le'Veon Bell was in his prime. So maybe we see some of that out of Najee Harris lined up out wide. I think Najee Harris can easily see 300 touches this year at least, or, you know, I think it's definitely in his range of outcomes.
So do you think that Najee Harris finishes as a top 12 running back? So
I don't know.
For me,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he does exactly because I haven't projected any of the running backs yet. And that all really comes down to, I think with any position, it comes down to touchdowns, because you could have one position. You could have like Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp last year, both finished with like this almost the same exact yardage, but Cooper Kupp had 2 touchdowns and Robert Woods had 10 touchdowns, and they finished light years apart. So it really comes down to touchdowns and scoring opportunities. I could see Najee Harris with what's happening in Indianapolis right now, finishing above Jonathan Taylor. I don't see why not. I think he'll have more receptions than Jonathan Taylor. I think he'll have more carries than Jonathan Taylor. Quentin Nelson going down now obviously causes issues for the offensive line. So we can't use the offensive line discussion really as a to bolster Jonathan Taylor. So above him, yeah. Maybe he finishes above Nick Chubb with the receptions. Who knows? Maybe he finishes in the top 12. You said top 12 at the position, right?
Yeah, top 12 at the position.
Yeah.
I have him just outside, but I could see him bumping above a couple guys. I have him as 15th running back this year.
Okay.
But – that kind of 10 to 17, there's a lot of running backs that I could see being higher, like Antonio Gibson's kind of in there, and CEH, and all those kind of running backs that are on, you know, fairly good offenses, but you don't really know how many carries they'll get and, you know, how the touchdowns will kind of go, because a lot of teams are going to utilizing more than one running back. So kind of like Malcolm Brown and for the Rams last year. I mean, I don't even know why he was on the field most of the time, but he had like four or five touchdowns and it was fantasy heartbreak, but when he would come in the game. But, you know, coaches are weird. They like certain guys and like to throw someone in, you know, just for goal line. Like last year, Jordan Howard had games where he had like two carries for 5 yards and two touchdowns. So, you know, there's always those situations. So I do agree, you know, projections are kind of, you know, a lot of luck on the touchdowns and everything. So that's really why I wanted to do projections this year, just to see how wrong I am and kind of, you know, get better at it. Because I don't think you can really get better, you know, as an analyst until you kind of take a look at, you know, everything and step, you know, even further. So I started doing rankings and then I decided why not do projections too, to kind of see where I would be, you know, after the season.
If I can add one note about James Conner, if we're talking about James Conner being less of an athlete than Najee Harris, right? And Najee Harris and finding a floor for Najee Harris and James Conner's production. If you look at James Conner in 2018, when he broke out, when Le'Veon Bell sat out and he had the entire backfield to himself, he in 13 games, he played, he amassed 71 targets, right? That's 71 targets. 71 targets. And that it was in 13 games. I haven't done the math on that yet, but I think if we look at a 17-game span, say the Steelers are vying for a contention and they need to play that last week, he can get close. He can get very close to 100 targets out of the backfield. Najee Harris can. So I think that puts him, that could put him easily in the top 12 if he can. So. Just that little nugget.
Yeah, that's good information. And, you know, after I probably watch the first series of preseason games, I might adjust. I probably have Najee Harris too low on the amount of targets he's going to get. So, you know, that's why I kind of wanted to wait till after at least one preseason game to finalize my projections, because, you know, I kind of think I know what the teams might do, but I know no one really knows. And with how COVID seems to be already starting, we're probably going to have another fantasy season where you're going into Sunday, you think you have your lineup set and then players won't play. So it's going to be another year where you might win just because you have better depth than other teams. So you need to, you know, look at that with your roster makeup too.
Sure.
All right. So that is all we have for this episode of What the Fantasy. So thanks for watching, and we'll have the podcast out in the audio form, you know, in a day or two. So I'm Brandon Hay at HeyB3,
and I'm Zadok Cantabedian at ZCantFF.
All right, thanks, guys.